Hey, good morning, everyone. I'm Jill Piner. I'm working in conjunction with Michael Byrne from Rice University. And today I'm going to be talking about accessibility in the polling place and with DREs, specifically with the visual impaired, so blind users and low vision. I want to thank the National Science Foundation. All this research is supported by them. And also the Texas chapter of the National Federation of the Blind for their support, their participation, and their help with recruiting subjects, which is really one of the hardest things to overcome with doing this research. Can you make it talk?
Well, let's see if this works first.
Okay, I'll start by giving you some background. What do we know about blind voters in general? What does the census data tell us? And how they participate in elections, and about a design of an accessible user interface that would provide the means necessary for blind voters to use the same type of systems that the general population does. I'll talk about our survey. We took a large survey of blind voters about their voting habits, their preferences, and things like that. And finally, we have a ton of results, but today I'll focus on guidelines for accessible DREs. And six things that we felt was very important pulling out of the data that we collected. So a huge 20% of the U.S. population today lives with one or more disabilities. And in turn, that means that over 8 million people have been unable to vote in an election due to barriers either at or getting to the polling place. And out of that, 0.5% of our population is legally blind. So when you look at this in comparison with the margins of victory in some elections, this is an incredibly large group of people that we need to accommodate. So as far as election participation goes, visually impaired individuals are underrepresented members. In 2008, census data shows that only 56.8% of the visually impaired population voted, compared to 64.5% of the general population. And those that do vote can't always do so independently or privately. A 2008 survey by the National Federation of the Blind showed that only 51% of blind voters who attempted to vote were able to do so independently. And a lot of times this was because accessible machines were not available at the polling place. There was only paper ballots or something like that. So obviously they would have needed assistance. But even in the locations where an accessible DRE was provided, only 86% were able to do so privately. And the 86% shows that DREs are good, and they're probably the best option for providing universal access to voting, but it's in no means perfect, and there's definitely room for improvement here, and that's why we undertook the survey to see what we can do to make this number better. So both these sets of numbers are from the 2008 election, and it shows you the difference between what types of methods were used. Blind voters tend to utilize alternative methods here. They cast their ballot in early voting or as an absentee mail-in ballot rather than voting in person on election day, which is what you can see the majority of the general population does. So the real goal of this study, these are steps towards a larger design of an accessible DRE. So we want to address both the usability issues and user-reported shortcomings in current DRE interfaces so that we can improve upon that. So our previous research undertook a mock election, and we wanted to see what do people actually have problems with. And adding to that, our current survey wants to see what people say they're dissatisfied with, what they have problems with, and how they would like to see these issues addressed. So the voter survey was made up of 52 questions. Covering a wide range of topics, election experience, and voting habits, and these were all administered to legally blind adults. Includes multiple question types, and subjects were given as much time as they desired to respond, and whenever applicable, we wanted to provide them a forum for their thoughts. We provide an open-end other option, and that was to account for options we might not be familiar with or hadn't necessarily thought of when designing the survey. And because there are so many questions covering such a wide range of topics, for this talk I'll be focusing on what our main conclusions were, which is a compilation of six guidelines that an audio DRE should follow to improve accessibility to a blind voting population. To give you an idea of what we asked them, The first half was the first 26 questions that we had used in previous voting experiences so that we could do some type of comparison with sighted individuals. So your basic demographic questions, things about computer experience and election participation, voting preferences among people, and difficulties they may have occurred to them at the polling place. And this allowed us to make direct comparison between blind and sighted voters, like I said. Although I won't go into these results during this talk, I want to tell you that the two groups are nearly identical on most factors we found. Blind voters did tend to have more computer experience and self-reported comfort dealing with technology, but that was really the only difference that we found. So we introduced 26 new questions as well, and that's to address the unique situations that are faced by blind voters. The first set of questions was about their vision. So proposed changes or user-adjustable settings in a visual interface, things like magnification, things they would like to see added. Their voting experience, so the user-reported amount of time that they normally spent in a polling place, what methods they used, and what types of assistance that they received, if any. Audio interface questions cover things like preferences about what type of audio and what type of gender voices they would like to hear, and we hope that that gave us an explicit answer about what should be used in a new system. And finally, input methods covered questions about possible interfaces, anything from directional arrows to a telephone keypad, to see what people are familiar with and what they would like to use. We obtained a total of 202 subjects, 112 were female, 78 were male, and 12 declined to answer the question. Pretty good range of ages from 19 to 86, with an average age of 50. And the respondents were both highly Caucasian and highly educated. We broke these down into levels of vision because we felt that these users may have had different experiences. They were used to using different types of accessible technologies, and we wanted to be able to compare across these groups. The first group is those with low vision. So those are individuals who can still function somewhat with their vision. They can read large point or magnified text. Those with light perception were able to tell dark from light and the direction of a light source, but not much more than that. And our largest group was those with no vision, who retained no residual vision. And the majority of our subjects were surveyed online. We obtained those through contacts in the blind community, through visually impaired blogs or mailing lists and the type like that. Though some responses were collected in person from the National Federation of the Blind's Texas State Convention. So we really want to answer the question, what do people say they're dissatisfied with? What would they like to see addressed? And how can we do that? So I came up with some basic guidelines to answer these questions. These are the things that we as a designer control, even if things like polling place location or poller worker training may be out of our hands. And they allow voters to have an optimal walk-up and use system. For each guideline, I'll give you some hard numbers and data that we collected from the survey, as well as some feedback regarding the blind users' opinions in their own words and some pretty good quotes that we collected. The first guideline would that be an accessible DRE should include an audio mode, and that audio mode should be able to use alone or in conjunction with a standard visual display. From our results, we found that currently 16.4% of the respondents used both interfaces, but they said that this number would increase if they could change things on the screen, like text size or contrast, and that leads into our next guideline. But this dual modality suggestion comes with a caveat. You need to be able to turn off the screen or blank it out if the voter doesn't want to use it to protect against people's privacy from both malicious intent and general human curiosity, other voters wanting to see what's going on, like this person mentioned. The system should provide the ability to adjust text size and contrast. People were asked what they would like to be able to adjust, and we see that 30% of those voters that don't currently use both systems would be much more inclined to use a visual system if they could do things like increase the font size or change the contrast. 23% wanted to make other changes, and that was similar to the two options that we had provided them. Many people wanted to see more than one font size option. Instead of just a large text, they wanted to be able to tailor it to their own needs. They also wanted to be able to put the system into a reverse contrast mode where they would have white text on a dark background. And this screenshot is actually from the AutoMark, which does allow for zooming and a high contrast mode, so that we wanted to show that certain vendors are actually including some of these into their products. So this applies beyond the blind voters, of course, to the aging population in order to make this more accessible for everyone. Increased text size and contrast would clearly help a wide variety of users be able to read the screen more clearly, and the population here definitely realizes that. Thirdly, the system should provide the ability to change audio properties. Volume and speed are two of the biggies. We ask people which of the following would you like to be able to adjust on an audio interface, and told them to choose as many as they would like. Over 90% said volume and speed are definitely a necessity when dealing with an audio system, and 98% of respondents wanted to be able to adjust at least one of these when they're using an audio interface. Here we can see that respondents have some very strong feelings towards voting audio as it currently exists. These quotes, I think, emphasize that voting machines are not necessarily up to the current standards of other accessible technologies that the voters may be used to using, like screen readers on their computers. Lots of strong opinions in that area. Also in regards to the audio, we feel that a male synthesized text-to-speech voice should be used. As you can see here, we asked voters if they would prefer their voting machine audio to use a recorded human voice or a synthesized voice. Those with no vision or only light perception were split pretty much 50-50. They did not have a preference about which type of voice they would have like to use. Only that 26% group, the low vision users, showed a preference and they preferred human voices. This makes sense because the no vision and light perception users rate themselves as much more comfortable using and understanding text-to-speech voices because that's the type of technology that they're exposed to in their daily life. The total of this is 55% preferred human voices and 45% prefer the text-to-speech voices. However, we recommend the text-to-speech voices over the slightly preferred human voices just because the ability to speed up the audio was so highly desired, and this is much easier to do with a synthesized voice. Also, computer-generated voices cut down on the time costs for individual voting districts, and they also don't have to worry about regional accents or unclear speakers when it would come to recording the audio. In addition, male voices are recommended because although most voters had no gender preference, among those that did, they strongly preferred male voices over female voices. And in most of the cases, the individuals went on to explain that they have some type of coexisting hearing loss, and hearing lower voices is much easier for them than hearing higher voices. Moving on, flexible navigation should be provided for these users to move forward and backwards through the ballot and to skip through different sections of speech, as well as to repeat things that they may have missed or things that might be unclear when a text-to-speech audio speaks it. This is the same question where we ask them what would be necessary for you in an audio system. There was an open-ended other category on this question, and that was almost entirely made up of suggestions for improving ballot navigation. Since this wasn't really addressed anywhere else in the survey, the fact that it came up so many times really pointed out to us that this was very important to respondents. People wanted to be able to repeat parts of a word, of a sentence, to be able to spell out individual words or individual names that they might not be able to understand, and to really be able to navigate at different levels that were important to them. I think the mental model that a lot of these respondents have is from their screen readers on their computers that has almost limitless customization and that really allows the individuals to interact very quickly with their computers, and people have seemed very frustrated trying to use something so simplistic as the current accessible DRE technology. And it really seems to lag behind the currently available solutions. So hopefully we can take cues from this other technology in order to improve the DRE audio experience for these users. finally, once you get through the voting process, you get to the review options. We asked people how important it was for them to have a way of directly verifying their ballot and that it accurately represents how they intended to vote. So 93% of people felt that the ability to review your ballot was either very important or essential in any voting system that they would want to use. But as we know, what people say they like is not necessarily what they do. Only 39% of our respondents said that they would always verify their vote. Most people, 45%, said they either sometimes or usually go through the ballot review process, depending on how much time they had or how they felt about the ballot. So the ability to review the ballot is necessary for when you need it, but it's also important that it can be skipped if the voter feels confident in their selections. So the future directions of this research is for really the design of an accessible DRE. We want to adhere to these six core guidelines by offering multiple modalities and adjustable options to accommodate a wide range of the voting population, not only visually impaired, but also elderly and aging population. And out of that, to be able to evaluate an audio DRE using these suggestions, against previously collected data on non-computerized technology used with blind users. And we want to do this in order to provide a truly accessible, private, and independent voting experience for blind voters. The ability to vote independently and privately, although it is something that is a legal right, many have not been able to experience. And I think this quote speaks for itself and highlights the importance of not only doing this research, but doing it thoroughly and correctly. And that's it. Thank you.
Great. We have plenty of time for questions.
Hi, I'm Eric Lazarus, independent researcher. Question. In a couple of jurisdictions that I've been involved with studying, virtually no one uses the accessibility devices at all. Like polling places, zero users in a particular polling place, maybe one. What comes up for you? What insights can you give us about why that might be the case? What's going on?
From the voters that I've talked to, a lot of people are completely uncomfortable with this technology. They want to, you know, have the ballot mailed to them and, have their husband or their wife read it to them and take care of it in their own home. But the people who do want to go out there and want to vote like everyone else are really frustrated about this situation, that they can't necessarily use what everybody else is using. My one thing that I've heard is people would like to be able to try out the technology before the election, be able to go to the courthouse or whatnot and actually be able to sit down and use the technology so they wouldn't feel the time pressure on election day. You have lines of hundreds of people behind you and you're trying to figure out a completely new technology.
Thank you.
Sharon Laskowski from NIST. So thank you for, and I'd like to encourage further research in this area. It's a very interesting talk. My question is to encourage more research in the future directions that you outlined, and specifically for the data that you collected. You said you had some demographics of ages up to 86. I wonder if you had any insights into some of the older voters and their reaction to this technology. And in particular, often aging voters who are newly blind, I don't know whether you collected that in your survey or not, may not be familiar and comfortable with audio technology, and also may have some cognitive disabilities. So I think there's a lot of room for design work in that area, and I just wondered if the data that you collected gave you any insight into that.
The data that we collected, most of our older voters tended to be people who had been blind for life, and because it was collected on the internet, the people needed some, you know, they were already familiar with email or the blogs that they were going to actually get the link to complete the survey, and they would have had to have some type of screen reader or other accessible technology on the computer itself and be comfortable with it. And that's why we got, you know, a highly educated population that was very comfortable using technology. So I think we didn't address the needs of this aging population, and I don't think they were included in the survey. We would need some other way to reach them.
I also have one further comment that I think it ties in a little bit with the question that Eric asked, and that is, in this population, newly disabled may not even classify themselves as disabled, and right. hence not want to go over to the corner and use the machine for the people with disabilities, and a more universal design, as we heard in the keynote, actually kind of said. That's designed for everyone, maybe would encourage these people to use and make better effective use of the accessibility features.
I agree. A lot of people probably wouldn't feel comfortable, or maybe older. I know my grandmother's one of them, would not even know to ask for something that would include audio. But if that was a standard option on all the machines that they could, you know, that they were introduced to in the introduction and the instructions, and that was something that they were provided with and they could use both modes, I think that would be beneficial to a lot of people in our population.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, listening to your description of this potentially ideal machine, this Douglas Jones University of Iowa, I was trying to think about the control panel, and I've got a volume control, a contrast control, a screen magnification control, a speech pace control, a skip back to previous word, skip, please spell that word for me, previous race, next race. I began to imagine the control panel of the Nautilus in the old Jules Verne movie, and I began to imagine an experience in the voting booth where the actual voting would be sort of an epilogue on this massive learning the customization of the machine. I think there's a usability problem. And I'm not quite sure how to deal with it.
I agree. So what we've preliminarily been looking at, I might have a picture. Okay. A button box that would have directional arrow keys that would provide your main type of navigation. They would left and right arrow keys would move you forward and backwards through different contests, and up and down arrow keys would move you through a list of candidates or yes and no in propositions. There would also be a select key that would have that one purpose of saying, yes, I want to vote for this person, or yes, I want to cast that ballot, so that wouldn't be confused with anything else. And then there would be a setup button or a menu button that you would go into in the beginning, and that would give you some type of text that you could go through, listen to, and set up each of your options there before you, like, sort of outside of the entire voting process itself, so that those things wouldn't get confused.
I'm Craig Burton from the Victorian Electoral Commission in Australia. I just wanted to give you a couple of quick anecdotes about some work we've done. We've just started providing assistive devices to voters in Australia. We have a highly complex voting system, and at the federal level, the voter can pick a party, make a single mark, or they can enumerate up to 100 people, and they have to put the numbers 1 to 100. And so it's not very popular, but about 5% of the population does it. But when we provided these assistive devices, the blind and vision impaired 5 times more likely to do this, right? So you can imagine how long it takes someone who can't see to listen to audio prompts and provide 100 numbers in order. And they're yet 5 times more likely to do it because when they're offered a greater franchise, they take it. And so we're very surprised by this. We thought the exact opposite would happen. The second thing I wanted to say is you talked about gender and the voicing on audio systems. We provide the system in Victoria where a woman speaks the general instructions and a man speaks the name of the district in the race and the candidates' names. It's a thing called voice fonts that we tried out, and we think it was very successful. So I'd like to chat about
that. Yeah, that is very interesting. I've gotten feedback from one person. She didn't say where she was located, but the type of audio they use when they go into the review screen, instead of having, you know, visually having the person that you voted for in red or in bold, when they read through it, they read all the candidates' names from a male voice, and then a female voice would be the person that reads the candidate that you selected, so that it's very easy for people to tell which one that the audio system thinks they voted for, instead of saying something like selected at the end. It was much more intuitive that way.
Nice question.
Thanks again for your talk. I think the guidelines that you mentioned, the six, are laudable. My question to you, as the current budgetary crisis exists, of course, as election offices, particularly those public entities, are doing more, having to do more with less. So I'm interested in what, if any, additional costs there would be, and if there are additional costs, where election offices or where they would be taking resources from in order to be able to making, I think, many of these much-needed goals a reality.
I think that's sort of twofold. I think voting manufacturers need to sort of listen to what blind individuals need or the visually impaired community needs. They may not have ever actually asked these people and just, you know, made assumptions about what an audio mode should sound like. So I think it is part of the vendor's responsibility on that. As far as the voting districts doing better with what they currently have, poll worker training seems to be a big one. Poll workers many times have never used or learned how to initiate these accessible modes, and a lot of the time that's spent waiting, that the blind voters seem to report like a much longer time takes to vote because it takes people a long time to get the machine set up in the modes, and then the poll workers don't necessarily know what to do with that. I think poll workers need to be exposed to these and taught how to use them. And like I mentioned before, the ability for a voter to come down to the courthouse beforehand and to try out the technology and learn to use it at their own pace may also be beneficial.
This is the last question. You got 10 seconds.
Ilan Kaplan from Everyone Counts. Just wanted to thank you. It was very enlightening for us that are building these systems. And we did a telephone voting system in Australia that used a very similar approach to the navigation that you outlined based on the telephone voting standard that was established by the New South Wales Electoral Commission. So really useful information. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's thank both our speakers one more time.